Christian Parenting. Aloha, friends. Welcome to the Monica Swanson Podcast, powered by Christian Parenting. I am Monica Swanson, mom to four boys, wife to Dr. Dave, podcast host, and author of Boy Mom and Raising Amazing. Here on the podcast, it is my goal to bring you practical advice and biblical wisdom for raising amazing kids and building strong families. You can always find show notes over at monicaswanson.com/podcast. I'm so glad you're here, and I hope you'll be encouraged. Aloha, friends. Welcome back to the podcast. I'm thinking you can probably hear my smile in my voice today, just because I'm opening this up thinking about how blessed I feel to get to do this every week. I just adore you guys and appreciate you. And I love sharing amazing guests like we have today. I know you're going to be so encouraged and inspired, maybe a little challenged by today's guest. But first, I also appreciate so much your ratings and reviews on the different podcast apps, your encouraging notes, messages, DMs. I read everything and I appreciate it so much. And today I'm going to share a recent review over from Apple Podcasts. And about once a month, I'm trying to do this. And if I read your review, then you get to email me and I will send you a Starbucks card because, you know, if I can't have coffee with you in real life, at least I can send you a little thank you. So today I am reading a review from Abigail Squires. She titled it, "If I could give more than 5 stars, I would." God bless you, Abigail. So sweet. And she did give 5 stars. And this is what she wrote. "While I was pregnant with my first son in 2018, God led me to Monica's podcast. I never really listened to podcasts, but wanted to get a little jump start on parenting before I had a baby. I cannot express the amount of gratitude I have toward Monica and the influence and impact she has had in my life and in parenting my now 2 boys. I share her episodes with everyone I can because I cannot pass up the opportunity to share a good thing when I hear it. I look forward to new episodes every week. Thank you, Monica, for using your talents to glorify God and encourage others to do the same. May God bless you and your family." Abigail, thank you so much for making my week. Seriously, what kind words. I'm humbled and so encouraged. And when I read things like this, they just fuel me up to continue to do what I love to do. And I do love this, guys, but there's a lot of work that goes into it. And so reading these ratings and reviews encourages me. It also feeds that algorithm you hear about. It helps the podcast people know that you like the podcast, and then it puts it out there in front of more people. And that is just all a way to bless me and the work I do. Also, I just want to thank you. It's been a while since I've started having more ads on the podcast. I know listening to ads isn't everyone's favorite. I also listen to podcasts, but I just want to thank you for understanding that that is one way you can support me. Obviously, this podcast is free. So just by listening to the ads and maybe even clicking over, maybe trying some of the products, that is one way you can support this podcast. So I just want to thank you so much for that. And now we're going to have an amazing interview with Abby Halberstadt, who you might know as M is for Mama. She's got a huge following. She's written a couple books. And today we're going to talk from her book, Hard is Not the Same as Bad. And I love this message so much. I really enjoyed getting to know Abby better. She's been on the podcast before, actually. So I'll link to that in show notes. But you're probably already following Abby. She's got 10 kids. Hello. She's homeschooled them. She is a powerhouse of a woman, but she has some real encouragement for all of us today. So I can't wait to share this. And you'll find links to her website, books, all the different things, and anything that I want to highlight from this conversation over in show notes, which you can find at monicaswanson.com/Abby-Halberstadt. Now, if you don't know how to spell that or it's too complicated, just go to my website, monicaswanson.com, click on the podcast link, and you will see her recent episode listed there. That works just fine. Now, before we jump in and listen to this conversation, I do want to make sure you know, if you've like not listened in a while or you don't get my emails, which I hope you do by now, but this week, yesterday, in fact, we just opened the doors and began going through the launch team for my next book called Becoming Homeschoolers. So some of you might be in that group. I am so excited to do this thing with all of you. But if you're not in that group yet, we are keeping it open for the rest of this week. So you are still welcome to join. Now, the launch team is not just for homeschooling families. You don't even have to want to homeschool. You just have to want to be a part of this and support me and my efforts. Anyone on the launch team gets early access to my book. We're going to have giveaways. I'm going to come on live. We're going to have just great conversations. And I think it's going to be a really encouraging, positive place. So there will be a link to where you can sign up also over in show notes. So again, monicaswanson.com/Abby-Halberstadt. And you will find links to that also if you're following me on social media, on my email list. It's everywhere. So don't miss it. If you want to be a part of it, this is your week to sign up. The book will release on May 7th. Super excited about that. And just a little side note, if you pre-order the book, hopefully you know any book you pre-order, you're always guaranteed the lowest price because books kind of go up and down in price, right? Well, when you pre-order, the day that the book releases, they charge you and they charge you whatever the lowest price has been throughout the whole launch season. So it's a smart way to get the very best deal. It also will arrive on your doorstep on the release day of May 7th. So, also, if you haven't seen, there's pre-order bonuses. I'm giving away fun, good, helpful, free stuff. So definitely check out my website and you'll see all the information you need. If you're not following me, get on Instagram at @MonicaSwanson_ and you'll find out everything you need to know. Okay? So I know a lot of announcements, but this is a really exciting season and I just am so thankful that I get to share it with all of you. So thank you for letting me share all that. Now, I don't want to take any more time because this is a great conversation. Hope you're encouraged by everything Abby shares as we dive in and talk about why hard is not the same as bad. I hope you're encouraged by this conversation. Hey, Abby, welcome back to the podcast.
Thanks for having me on, Monica.
Yes, it is a privilege to get to grab a little time in your very busy life. Now, you've been on with us before. I guess it was when this was the Boy Mom podcast, but you're a mom of boys and girls, and you've got a whole lot going on. So for anyone that doesn't know you, could you just give a quick introduction?
Yeah, sure. I'm Abby Halberstadt. I am first and foremost a sinner saved by grace, by Jesus. And if you knew nothing else about me, that's what I would want you to know, that he is good and that his grace is enough. And I also get to be married by the grace of God to a really amazing man named Sean. And together we have 10 children, and people always ask, you know, like, are they all yours from the same dad? Any multiples? Which we do. We have 2 sets of twins. And so, yeah, 10 kids in 14 years. Our oldest is 17, will be 18 in May, and our youngest are 3-year-old now, twins. So we have, yeah, we have a lot going on always.
You do. And because I don't think it ever gets old, tell us about the twins. You've got twins on bookends,
right? So we have a set of identical boy twins. Those are our 3-year-olds and identical girl twins. Those are our 11-year-olds. And that in and of itself is very unusual because people always ask, do twins run in your family? Like, is it hereditary? And fraternal twins? Yes. Where you actually have 2 fertilized eggs. But where an egg splits is not, that's just a gift from the Lord. It's not supposed to be hereditary. It's not supposed to happen more likely in one person than another. They've tried to study it and find any kind of like factors that would make someone more likely. I'm sure they exist, but they haven't found consistencies yet. So the fact that I have 2 sets of identical twins, which are spontaneous and don't have to do with genetics or aren't supposed to, or passed down, is kind of crazy. And we actually were pregnant with another set of identical twins. We lost our number 6, our number 7. So we have number 6 at 8 weeks. And so that's even crazier because we're pretty sure he was identical as well. The easiest way to tell with what's called mono di twins is that the mono refers to the placenta. The di refers to 2 separate amniotic sacs. So if they share 1 placenta, it's because your body was preparing to have 1 baby and then that split and now you have 2. So that's unusual. And then the crazy thing is that they were born on the same calendar day. 8 years apart. So September 24th, we knock out 4 birthdays all at once.
Seriously, like that just never ceases to blow my mind.
Yeah,
that's gotta
mine
be
either.
Wild. You know, yeah, you couldn't plan that. You couldn't, which just shows the goodness and grace of God. I love
that's
it.
That's pretty cool.
So fun. It is so great. And I'm just curious, talking twins, was it any easier? Did you feel like you kind of came into it the second time with a little more like, okay, I got this, or was it a whole new ballgame?
Well, Evie and Nola were actually pretty easy babies. Having two at one time is not easy. It's just not.
No,
having
no
one at a time is brand new. It's not easy, you know? That's not the goal. We're not looking for this to be easy.
That's right.
Not why we had kids.
Which is what our conversation's all about today.
Right. Two is definitely harder, but Evie and Nola were very chill babies. They were the opposite of chill toddlers. And I talk about this some in the book that we're going to discuss. But as babies, they were pretty easygoing. Like they were sleeping a decent amount of time at night together by 11 weeks. We nursed pretty well. Like it was a big adjustment, but because I already had three other kids. So I had 5 kids, 6 and under. And 2 of them were the same age and 1 was a toddler and, you know, just boom, boom, boom. And so it was fine. I remember feeling overwhelmed at times, but I remember being grateful that my expectations of that very newborn stage being just utterly overwhelming weren't really met. Well, Titus and Tobias were not easy babies. they were not chill. They did not sleep. And so honestly, I don't know that they threw us for a loop in the sense that it was anything new. It was just a lot of it. Like it was both hands on deck. Like my husband and I were holding passies in their mouths at the same time at night, trying to like keep them in there without falling asleep ourselves, but of course failing miserably. And then they're awake again. Just, so there wasn't much sleep that happened for about 11 months in that case, but you know, we made it.
Oh man. And when you're already a little older and tired and have all these other kids, like, come on.
Yep.
Well, you earned the right to write these books that you write. So now tell us a little about that. I don't know if I know the story of when you started writing. Like what was your pathway from being a mom to what you're now doing?
Yeah. So I have wanted the one consistent quote unquote dream. And I always say, I'm not a dreamer. I'm a pragmatist. I'm not like a pie in the sky. I don't have 5-year plans. It's like, we're getting dinner on the table tonight and we know where we need to be for the rest of the week and I'm good, you know, kind of thing. And it's less about not being forward thinking and more about just being extremely practical. I don't really have any control about what's happening in 6 months, you know? So I'm going to do the thing always. I'm going to be the girl that does the thing that needs to be done, right? And so if I had anything that I would have labeled a dream or just kind of a desire of my heart that never went away, it was being a published author, even since I was little bitty. So like 7, I remember, I want to write books. And the Lord never took that desire away. And I pursued a path of writing multiple times when I was in my 20s. I wrote a novel in completion, shopped it around, you know, did some things like that. And the Lord just very clearly closed doors in my face. It wasn't the right time. And then I started a blog almost 13 years ago when my third, who is a little girl, I have 3 girls right in the middle of 7 boys. And when she was maybe about 7 or 8 months old, I started a blog for the express purpose of growing an audience to write a book one day. Well, when you're like 8 years deep into that and you've had another, I think at that point, 5 kids, you kind of go, it's probably not happening, right, Lord? Like this is what you want me to do. You want me to raise these babies and these older kids and these kids that are starting to get deep voices and really tall and write on the internet to whomever you choose to bring across my path. And that's what you have for me. And I had really gotten really content with that. I wasn't pursuing authorship in a traditional way or querying people or looking for agents. My life was just really full. And I say in the book that I remember telling my mom, like at some point in there, kind of before I had surrendered the dream to some extent, that I was like, Lord, or mom, how would I ever find time to do this? Like, there's just so much. And she, in an attempt to kind of reassure me, was like, you know, if you've got a message that needs to be said, then somebody will say it. Like, if the Lord needs the message out there, it doesn't have to be you. And of course, to a dream in your heart, that's like stake in the heart. You're like, oh, mom, you're supposed to be the Disney mom. Because my mom is the kindest human in the world. I'm not like complaining about her. She was trying to release me from that burden of feeling like I needed to be the one to say these things. And she's like, you know, the Lord can accomplish it. You know, I think kind of, you know, that response of like, where Elijah's like, I'm the only one. I didn't think I was the only one. I wasn't saying that, but it's like, you know, it's gotta be me, or I feel like I want to do this. And I wouldn't say that my message had just completely cohered at that point yet. Like, I don't know that I had gotten it down to this burning passion in my heart, you know, to share this particular message. I just knew that I wanted to write, and I was writing. So she's like, you know, take what you got, be faithful in what you have. And then if it needs to happen, it'll happen, or the Lord will give that message to somebody else. And so I remember just thinking like, oh, okay, well, I guess that's what it is. Well, then in November of 2019, I got an email. I was walking through my bedroom on my way to do laundry. I just put my 8-month-old baby down for a nap. That was number 8.
I love that you know the scene. You have it in your head. I love that you know the scene.
I know. And my phone dinged, and I wasn't even going to check it because I was like, get as much done as possible while the baby's asleep. You know, I had like a wallpaper project and I needed to flip the laundry, and I was just going to kind of go. And my other kids, I think, were at my mom's because I think the baby was the only one home with me. And I saw just like out of the corner of my eye, the notification, and it said something about a publishing house, but you know how it is. You get lots of emails from publishing houses that want you to promote their book. They want to send you a copy. And I was like, that's what it is. But I kid you not, Monica, I had a micro fantasy, 0.2 seconds of what if that's not what it is, you know? And that never turns out to be what's actually happening. It's always that it's a fantasy and not reality. Something in the wording caught my eye, and I opened it, and it was indeed a publisher from Harvest House Publishers asking me if I'd ever thought of writing a book. She'd been following me for years. She had kids at about the same time that I'd been having kids, kind of the same spacing. She herself had been really encouraged by what I was sharing about motherhood, related to me deeply on a personal level, and just wanted to know if I would consider reaching out to them and working with them. And I mean, you know, I just about threw the phone out the window in my excitement and immediately texted my husband, who was on a work trip. And he doesn't usually text back right away because he's on a work trip and he's in the middle of work. But I got an answer in like 2 seconds. It was like, oh my goodness, that's amazing, because he's so encouraging and supportive and has always said that he thinks that someday that this will happen, even when I think I had lost faith. And so he said, that's amazing. What are you going to do? And I'm like, I'm going to try and play it cool. So I waited probably like maybe an hour, and then was like, I have thought about it a time or two. Yes. This has entered my mind. What did you have in mind? You know, kind of thing. And so originally I was going to write the book that you are holding now in your hands called Hard Is Not the Same Thing as Bad, but they wanted to call it Emma's for Mama because that's my brand. And I just really felt like that was not the right title for the content of that book. I didn't want people to feel like they'd been bait and switched. And so, but then when they said, we need a book called Emma's for Mama, I was like, well, I can write that book. I have been doing these Q&As. I know kind of what these women need. I know what they're asking for. I know what they're begging for answers for every week, and themes are emerging. I could 100% have enough content for this book to kind of be the gateway
to the real book I want to write.
Yeah. So, and Emma's for Mama ended up being very much so a real book that I wanted and needed to write. It's just really clear that the Lord and His sovereignty made the order of what it was. I've had so many people say, I'm so glad I read Emma's for Mama first and got my feet wet, because I think I would have not been ready for Hard Is Not the Same Thing as Bad had that not been kind of the order of things. So yeah, the Lord knew what He was doing, shockingly enough, as He always does.
Wow. So awesome. I love that story. That's really encouraging. And I know you probably, like I do, hear from people who say, I want to write a book. I think I have a book in me.
Yeah.
And I love that your story, like mine, didn't start off writing a book. We just did the next thing. With very similar to you, I really had no idea where it would lead. I just thought, I'm going to be faithful. And I've told the story, I don't know if I've ever told it on the podcast, but at one point when I was a blogger doing just this, you know, didn't have a large audience or anything, there was a moment where my husband, over a date night sushi dinner, kind of challenged me and was like, so is this a hobby or a job? Like, starting to take a lot of time. And my passion kind of rose up in me, and I was like, you know, I feel like I'm doing what I was created to do. And yes, I want to continue to homeschool. I want to be the best wife and mom I can be. But whether I have 10 people or 10 million people reading, I feel like I need to keep writing. And it was in that moment that he looked across the table at me and said, okay, then I'm on board. How can I support you?
I love that.
And it was the very next blog post I wrote was my first viral blog post.
Oh, wow.
I can't help but feel like God was doing something in just bringing us together and getting my husband on board.
Yeah.
And I think before that, I wasn't in any way not respecting him. He didn't ever tell me not to write, but I didn't feel like he was part of it. It felt kind of like my little sneaky side passion.
Yeah.
So once he stepped up and said, let me support you, I feel like everything changed. So
it changes everything. Absolutely. I dedicated my first book to Sean. I call him Albie. And I said, you know, for you, because you always thought I could. Like he never, it sounds so cheesy, but he never doubted that the Lord could accomplish it. And even in the midst of the unlikely circumstances of having to juggle it, plus motherhood, plus homeschooling, plus all the things that when people hear this, a lot of times they don't respond super well. They're like, well, I mean, clearly you gave something up or whatever. But even with MS for Mama, interestingly enough, so I signed this contract in November of 2019. I didn't know what was going to happen in 2020. I didn't know I was going to be pregnant with twin baby boys. I did not know that the world was going to shut down. And do you know when I wrote this book? I wrote this book while the world was shut down. And the Lord gave me time to gestate two babies and also gestate this book baby in a way that I was completely unaware would happen. But I, like, my schedule went down to like nothing, you know. I couldn't teach fitness classes. I couldn't, you know, all these things that were, our church shut down for a little while, not for very long, but you know, there were just way fewer social requirements on my time during a specific period when I needed a really concentrated amount of time to spend on, you know, writing these chapters. And I still feel like, my husband has always said, we've built a couple of houses together. I say casually as if that's not an amazing accomplishment on his part, but he is incredible. So when I say we, I do a lot, but of course he's the builder. And he's really fast. Like he and his dad get in there and they just go, and two guys get a ton done because they're invested. It's our house. They want it done well, you know, that kind of thing. And he says, I feel like you do the same with writing. Like you crank out a ton in a short period of time. And I feel like part of that is just that foundation that the Lord helped me to lay for all of those years when it wasn't on a deadline. You're practicing your craft. You're honing your voice. You're getting so much better at condensing thoughts down into coherent sentences. Like those almost 10 years that I spent blogging before a book was ever out into the public were not wasted at all. And not just because they helped me to practice for what the Lord was preparing me for, but because I have like a family journal of all these things I might not have documented otherwise, you know? So I'm just kind of looking back and being like, oh Lord, you just really had it every step of the way. Again, not surprised, but it's still cool to see.
Oh, I love that. And I want to transition and talk about this book, but all of this really leads so well into it. And I guess maybe there is somebody listening who is a writer or dreaming of being a writer. So I hope that this story does encourage you to A, start writing, whether it's on a blog or in a journal, just be writing. And if the husband factor, you know, that story came up too, maybe your husband's not on board. Well, pray and keep being faithful to do the first things first is what I say. I mean, I was 40 years old with four kids before I wrote my first blog post, and that was God's timing. And so I say, do the most important things. And so hopefully someone out there is encouraged by both of our stories. But it was during those years that you and I did a lot of hard things, not necessarily hard in the eyes of the world or big, you know, you were building houses. I wasn't building houses, but I was lonely and I was faithful and I wasn't always doing a great job, but we were doing the hard things in the home. People listening are doing the same, as well as probably a whole lot of other hard things. So hey friends, with Mother's Day just around the corner, are you thinking about a truly special gift you might get your mom? I know every year I try to think of something unique, and I'm so excited to get to tell you about a really good idea. MyLifeInABook.com is a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book. Pretty cool, right? Here's how it works. Every week, MyLifeInABook.com will send your mom a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions you wish wish to ask. And then she can either type her response or record her voice. And mylifeinabook.com will compile all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book. And guess what? They can even create an audiobook if you prefer, using her voice recordings. It's like preserving her voice and her stories for eternity. Imagine discovering stories about her youth, her adventures, and the challenges she has overcome. This book becomes a legacy, something you and future generations can treasure forever. Your mom's given you a lifetime of stories. This is your chance to give her a way to share them. Now, recently I was able to order mylifeinabook.com for my mom, and I cannot wait to hear all of her stories. She has such great stories. I can't wait to see them all in a book form. So check out mylifeinabook.com and use code Monica at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom this Mother's Day. Again, that's mylifeinabook.com and use code Monica for 10% off today. If someone had told me 18 years ago when my older sons started homeschooling that one day they would be graduating from college with degrees in engineering and data analytics, I'm not sure if I would have believed you. I wouldn't have known how they could learn all those things since those are not my areas of expertise. Well, thankfully God provided and we found some great curriculums along the way, and the curriculum that my boys would say most prepared them for their studies was the Shorman math classes found at diveintomath.com. Now, Dive Into Math offers a biblical and historical foundation in their math classes, teaching the why of learning math. They have self-paced courses and state-of-the-art e-learning systems featuring expert video instruction, interactive assignments with auto-grading, auto-recording, video solutions, and Q&A support with Dr. Shorman, which my boys did utilize. Now, Dr. Shorman is from Texas A&M. He is well-studied, so smart, but he's moved here to the North Shore of Oahu, and we've gotten to know him well, and he is an amazing man we have so much respect for. This next year, as Levi starts high school, he'll be taking Dr. Shorman's Algebra 1 and 2, which teaches every concept on the PSAT, SAT, and ACT with over 200 practice questions. You guys, this is a great curriculum. I highly recommend if your kids are interested in college or at least you want to keep that door open, definitely go to diveintomath.com, check out all that they have to offer. Let me know what you think. Can't wait to hear from you. You mentioned that this was your first book dream idea. Where did this concept, I know a bit from reading your book and following you that you might not have been raised with all these concepts, you know, drilled in daily, but how did you come to understand the value of hard?
I think that I really did have those concepts drilled into me. I would say my parents, of course, I talk about this in the book, they're not perfect, but their intentions were good. And even though the practice or the execution wasn't always perfect, especially in the case of my dad, who struggles with some mental health issues, I saw tenacity and I saw willingness to sacrifice for the sake of the outcome being better than what they were given. I saw an encouragement not to be self-focused. I mean, my mom, I already told you, is, you know, the type that is going to be like, you know, you just keep doing the right thing and it doesn't have to be you. And if it is you, great, but like, you just give God the glory. And I can't tell you how many times as a kid, something disappointing would happen. And my mom was very affectionate. She had nicknames for her. She was very loving. She would always give us hugs, but she was also no nonsense. And she would be like, dig deep into Jesus. Like, I'm not going to go make sure you get that part in the play that you wanted. I'm going to say, I get that it's hard, but the Lord has a purpose. The Lord's still sovereign. The Lord has a reason for this. And you need to turn around and dig deep into Jesus. She wasn't just, and she would, you know, take me and get me some Taco Bell or something terrible like that. She was such a health freak, but she knew I loved those crunchy tacos. She would take me and run me through the drive-thru and get me some Taco Bell and take me to Goodwill. It's not like, because we like to thrift shop. That may have sounded weird to people that don't like to thrift shop, but that was a pick-me-up. And so it wasn't just these empty words. She backed them up. But at the same time, the idea was never that if you experience a hard thing, if you experience a setback, if you are overlooked, if you are mistreated, that means that the Lord doesn't love you, that he's not good, that this circumstance was outside his hands. and that you are the worse off for it. In fact, quite the opposite. I think I had really had it drilled into me that these were opportunities for growth and that they shouldn't be despised.
That's huge. And yet, just like me, you then became a mom and had to kind of learn in real life, real time, what this looks like in the home. You open the book with a story about kind of hitting your wit's end. Can you share a little bit about that and how that even led to what you have to share now?
Yeah. So I, again, had some kids going on there. At that point, that would have been six kids when the book opens. And which is obviously an insane number to most people. Like, why would you do that to yourself? I mean, I've literally been asked that. And yet we've gone on to, you know, have four more. So we really must be crazy. It is funny that as you reach a certain threshold and you get a little bit older, people stop having quite as much audacity to question you. Like, they're kind of like, you know what? She's too far gone. Like, she's just, this is who she is. She just did that job. We're just going to leave it be, you know, kind of thing. And when you get older kids, people feel a lot more audacity to question you when your kids are boom, boom, boom and little bitty, kind of like they kind of think like they can't understand me. They won't get it. Now kids do pick up on things, I truly believe. And, I really encourage all adults everywhere to be careful with what they say around young years, because speaking words of life really can be such an effective way to disciple young children that you see in the grocery store, even to praise their mom for good job, you know, good job being here and getting that healthy food. And man, you're doing a really good job of helping him with his tantrum, or, you know, whatever it is that we can do to be encouragers. But I was dealing with six kids, 2 3-year-olds, late twos, early threes, and they just lost their proverbial minds. I mean, they just didn't respond to anything that I had worked with my other three. And I already had some challenging kids. Like, people are like, okay, so you had 10 kids because one, you're incredibly patient, which is not true. I'm not naturally patient. The Lord has grown me in that area, but I'm not naturally patient. And two, you must have just a bunch of docile, compliant kids. And I just snort, you know, I'm like, no, that's not how that works. My first was hard in certain seasons. My second was hard in certain seasons. My third was very rarely hard. And I think the Lord just kind of throws some of those in there just for an extra little dose of sugar, because we're like, man, you know, just need a break, Lord. Della, my first girl, is very chill and always has been. Now there are seasons still in her life where we've had to work through things, and there will be seasons in the future where we do. There's no such thing, because we are in this, you know, broken world and we are sinful humans. That means no trouble ever. But she was really chill, and those babies were pretty chill. And then they went crazy in their toddler years, and no amount of consistency, no amount of follow through, no amount of reasoning, no amount of like baby, like toddler proofing. It just wasn't sinking in. And I already knew not to expect, quote unquote, my methods to work in a week. I get messages all the time from people that are really frustrated that something isn't going their way with their kids. And you're like, well, you know, consistency is key. I've been very consistent. Okay, well, how long? 2.5 weeks. I'm like, I am so sorry to deliver the bad news that it's probably going to take another 20 years. Like, maybe not to see some fruit, obviously, but the consistency is a long haul commitment. And I knew that mentally, and I felt like I was in it, but it still was just not seeming to make a dent. And I talk about the fact that our car rides were just miserable. They screamed from the moment that I buckled them into the car until the moment that we arrived, and often long afterwards. I distinctly remember, so I am a fitness instructor. I've taught classes for 13 years, and I actually 14, 15, since my second born was in utero, 16 and a half years. I don't even know how long. So I've done this for a long time. And I taught at a gym for 12 years. That's where that number came from. I taught at a gym for 12 years that had 3 flights of stairs to get into the building. Like, you were already huffing and puffing before you ever started to work, especially when you were bringing 6 small children with you. So I have distinct memories of carrying 2 toddlers, 3-year-olds, 1 on each hip and a baby carrier on 1 arm up 3 flights of stairs. I have no idea what my heart rate was when I got to the top, but it was the only way we were making it into the building in time for me to teach this class, while both of the toddlers are losing their ever-loving minds the whole way. And a lot of people will be like, oh, why didn't you just quit and stay home for a time? And you know what? That might have been wise, but that was not my personality. I was gonna tough it through. But in the process, I just remember sometimes literally banging my head against the glass window of my van, just kind of conk, conk, like just something to just kind of take my mind off of how much I was being screamed at. And feeling like that season probably was never going to change, and that maybe I had been deluded in thinking that consistency and follow through and instruction and love and discipline were actually going to do anything with these two little humans who were insane. And during that time, as I'm walking through it, I am on the internet and I'm having people message me and they are seeing me. I mean, I didn't share great details, but I'm like, these little girls are throwing me for a loop. This is intense. The Lord is teaching me a lot through this. They're like, so what do you do with this? And someone's like, it's just hard. I just don't like it. Whatever it was that they were paralleling with my own experience. And I was walking with my best friend. That was kind of our sanity. I would strap a baby on my chest and we would walk the trails right beside our gym, because as long as we were like within a mile and had left our phone numbers, they were fine with our kids being in childcare, which was amazing. So we would walk these trails in the fresh air and talk this thing through. And I remember just looking at her one time in a moment of like kind of exasperation of going through something very hard that was testing my limits of patience and endurance and resourcefulness, and saying, all these people want me to tell them how to go around the hard. But the thing is, hard is not the same thing as bad. Like, I don't enjoy this season that I'm in for the particular reasons X, Y, and Z. But it's not a bad thing that I'm in it. Like, the Lord didn't do this by accident, and I am learning so much. And so she goes, so I said, I don't know what to tell these people. She goes, tell them that. And I was like, ah. So I started using that as a hashtag on social media, and I probably used it for 7 or 8 years before I was ever published. And it just caught on. Like, people, it resonated. It was like this little, like, tiny, like, switch in something in your brain that was like, oh, I have been told, I have been conditioned, I have come to adopt the mindset that if it's difficult, it must be something not worth doing. I see this so much in all aspects of culture, but I really see it in motherhood, because there's just this daily confrontation of our sin and our selfishness and our self-focus and our desire for ease, which a desire for ease in and of itself, I don't think is evil or anything like that. I think it absolutely makes sense. We see Jesus himself in the garden begging to have this horrible thing, like, please don't, not this, you know, kind of thing. And yet his faithfulness, of course, and that's what I talk about in the intro to the book, is faithfulness to follow through on the hardest thing anyone has ever done is the best example of hard is not the same thing as bad that we have in history. And how can I then therefore despise my own version?
So good. And I think that's just that perspective shift. Like you said, there's nothing wrong with desiring rest or ease, but recognizing in the moment. And one thing I love in your book is at the end of each chapter, you have kind of the world's view of hard and the Christian response to hard. Tell us a little bit about that, like how you categorize that, because I think that if we can learn to see things and have it kind of click, like you said, when you said those words, like, oh, people can grab onto that and face whatever's in front of them today, recognizing, yeah, this is hard. Maybe I can find a better way to do it, an easier way to do it. But if it's just hard, how can we look at that? Can you give us a
So my goal is always to bring or to shine the light of scripture on whatever it is that we are mentally struggling with, whatever it is we're grappling with, whether it's cultural or personal or interpersonal, relational, and to say, what does the Bible have to say about this? Now, people get very literal and they're like, but the Bible doesn't say anything about twin toddlers, Abby. So what are you really going to get out of this? And I think that when we renew our mind with scripture, the Lord is faithful to show us those passages that are really enlightening. Like, I always love using Galatians 6:9, which doesn't have anything specific to do with motherhood, but don't grow weary at doing good, for in the proper time you will reap a harvest if you do not give up. It's like basically the most encouraging verse ever to every mother that, you know, like reads it. You're like, oh, this is work. Like, this is worth it. All this investing is going to have fruit. And if not in visible fruit that I can see in my children, in my own life, like it's going to change me and grow me, because that in and of itself is ultimately why we're called to do what we're called to do. Invest in others, yes, but also be accountable to the Lord ourselves. And so I put that part at the end of the chapters as a way of easily condensing down these concepts so that you can parallel a worldly mindset, which I think we're all capable of falling into, absolutely myself included, something that we have to battle daily. And I don't think that there's any shame in that. I think scripture tells us to put on the full armor of God because it is fully aware that we are going to struggle. We hear Paul talking about, you know, the things that I want to do aren't the things that I do. The things that I don't do are the things I end up doing. Who can save me from my wretched state? And the answer is Jesus. And so we have so many scriptures that line up with this concept that Jesus, even though he was facing death, did not despise it, but was obedient even to death on a cross. Like he humbled himself. He did all these things that the world would tell us, if you're in a position of supreme authority, why would you ever put yourself through that? How foolish would you be to take that on? Why is the advice to us not to manifest our best selves and to pursue the most prosperous future, but instead to take up our cross daily and follow Jesus? How countercultural is that? And yet, how much are we able to see the joy there is when we truly surrender to the Lord those desires and wishes and dreams, like wanting to write a book, and then he brings it to fruition when he chooses in his own time. And like I said, if he chooses, because there are absolutely things that I have desired that never came to pass. And honestly, some of them, I don't know why. And some of them I'm like, praise the Lord, that didn't happen. You know, like, wow, I dodged a bullet. I thought that that was going to be great. And it was really going to be disaster, you know? So I put those things at the end. It's called the narrative. And I did it in MS for Mama as well, because busy moms reading lots of words, it's not lots of words, but reading words, it needs to be supported with scripture. And then it needs to be reinforced really quickly. So bullet points to help you go, oh, that's absolutely how my brain has been working. Or, you know what? I see that all over social media, and I never made the connection that that's what that was. But look what scripture has to say about it. Cool. That helps so much. So that's why I did that.
And I also think it's helpful because it helps us recognize so often when we've seen something enough times, it becomes normalized.
Yeah.
So by seeing those bullet points, we can go, oh, when we're scrolling and we're seeing something that seems either entertaining, funny, relatable, but it's actually feeding something in us that's really not healthy, not going to be for our good or our family's good, then we can recognize it and be like, oh, wait, that's not truth. So
right.
I appreciate. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what we want to do, is we want to preach what's right and true. That's exactly right.
Yes. Okay. Another thing I'd love for you to touch on before we wrap up, and we'll just send people to get the book for themselves. But I love how you talk about the refining, restoring, then back to refining process. I think that's something we could apply whether we've read the book or not today. So can you just give us a little insight into what that is?
Well, sure. I mean, the only hard thing in my life wasn't 3-year-old toddlers. Like, and it wasn't the hardest thing in my life leading up to that point. And it hasn't been the hardest thing in my life since. The Lord is in this process of gently and sometimes not so gently chipping away at these things that are keeping us from being more like him. And we are called to follow Jesus. And if we love him, we will obey his commandments. But sometimes we don't yet know what is right and good and true. Maybe we're not mature enough yet to recognize some things that the Lord's calling us to do, which is why we have verses in the Bible, for example, that say, for the person that knows what they should do and they don't do it, for that person, it's sin. And so the Lord, I think, is gracious to give us seasons of kind of a pressure cooker feeling, and then take us, it says he will restore us. And then, you know, then we go through the hard seasons again. So it's a lifelong process of sanctification. Now, it may look to us like this is not happening to other people. We may look at someone else's life and think they have had nothing but smooth sailing. And there, I do believe, are people that experience less physical and mental suffering in their lives than others. I think some people, like my parents, like I talk about in the book, one of the things that the Lord has designated for them is to be chain breakers, and they don't get the benefit of those chains being broken themselves as much as their children do. And one of our jobs as parents is to give our children not everything they quote unquote deserve or make their lives as easy as possible, but to be so faithful in our delivery of God's word and in being a true reflection of his goodness as much as possible. And then when we don't do well, apologizing for it and repenting and confessing to our kids and accepting their forgiveness and moving forward. But part of our job is to lay this foundation for them, this legacy. And for some people, that's going to be easier than others. That's why I'm always encouraging people who have boring testimonies like I do, boring, quote unquote, where it wasn't like I was in drugs and I was promiscuous and, you know, I had an abortion and, you know, this litany of things that the Lord saved me from. And yet the Lord has still saved me from so much darkness in my heart. And so that concept of it's not necessarily a roller coaster. You're on a high, then you're on a low, then you're on a, it's not that linear. It's more like, don't get so comfortable in the seasons of ease that the Lord has for you that instead of being grateful for them, you resent the times that it will inevitably come where you struggle, because everybody has it, no matter how easy it looks for them. Everybody has it. And also, don't get so convinced of the valley that you're in being the only thing that lasts that you start to despair. Very personal example of something that seems kind of small, but was really debilitating. I struggled with back pain really strongly for about 4 months back in the fall. Our house flooded last August, right before I released a book called Hard Is Not the Same Thing as Bad.
Isn't that wild? I remember going, are you kidding me? really?
Yeah. The Lord was like, do you really mean it? It flooded our entire downstairs. We've had to rip everything out, completely start over with our kitchen. This is the house that we built. So you're like ripping up stuff that you put in the first place with your own hands. And the Lord's been really gracious in the process, but it has still been a process. Yeah, it's been hard. I think I'm allowed to say that. And I started having really serious back pain that was affecting like my ability to put pants on in the morning and to pick up my children and to bend over to wipe a bottom. And I have 2 3-year-olds that are not potty trained yet. So that happens all the time. My ability to sit for long periods or do. And I just kept pushing myself so hard through the whole thing because it was like probably the busiest fall of my entire life. I launched a book. I had speaking events. We had to move. We had to renovate a house. We're still doing that. We're not home yet. It was genuinely a lot. And, you know, of course they tell you so many of your physical symptoms are often a reflection of your stress levels. And at a certain point, I really did think, not necessarily in despair, but almost more like trying to prepare myself reasonably or realistically for the future. Is this what my physical life looks like for the rest of my life, Lord?
Exactly.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Easy to go there mentally moment.
Yeah. I had tried so many things and they were not having a material effect. It did not seem. And so it was kind of like, you're going to have to learn how to cope. And I know people with chronic illness that do. They are getting up every day with chronic pain. They are doing their life with chronic pain. And it diminishes you. It makes you more short-tempered. It tires you out. Like just all this stuff. And not too surprisingly, I finally got to the point, because I was still teaching classes, I was just majorly modifying. And I got to a point where I realized I could not teach this weightlifting class anymore. In the middle of class is when I realized it. So I was having to like fake the moves and tell people I'm so sorry. And it was just the Lord being like, just stop. Like you aren't as essential as you're pretending like you are. Because we don't have a lot of subs. And I was trying not to inconvenience people. It was less like I'm the only one that can do this well. And more like there isn't much of anybody else. And I'm going to stress somebody else out if I have them do this for me. So I'm just going to keep doing it until I literally couldn't. Physically could not. And so, you know, who else isn't surprised that rest was actually the main thing that healed my back, you know? And in this season that I'm in right now, even with not being home yet, even with some other things that are going on, it's not nearly as stressful as last fall. And the Lord has restored me and redeemed me. And then there will be another season where you're in it and you just can't feel like you're ever going to get out of it, you know, and that it might not ever be good again. But the big thing is to declare the Lord's goodness through it. Because I will say, I didn't feel despair. I was like, Lord, you're good. I don't know what you're doing here. I don't know why we're doing it this way, but you're good. We're just going to keep going.
Right. And he also just used you to model to a lot of other moms out there when they're facing something like that, how to walk through it with grace, even when it's really hard. So,
well, that's really kind. I would love to make sure that you know that I didn't always do it well.
Well, I was watching. I was inspired. And I have had seasons of back pain. So I also felt your pain and was like, oh, man. And you can't help but think, this is it. This could be. This could be my new normal.
This could be me. Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, I just want to ask one question as far as those listening who have kids, because I talk a lot about character and I have a character training course. Mm-hmm. And in my books, I talk about, I have a chapter in my book, Raising Amazing, that is adversity is the fuel for greatness. Mm. And that's really about helping our kids not run from challenges. You know, obviously don't go looking for them. None of us do. But when they are facing something hard, whether it's relational or physical, you know, there's some really hard things out there. Mm-hmm. How to teach our kids to use those things, to turn to God, to find, you know, the strength to face them and grow through them. And then also, because the reality is we are raising our kids in a world where there are, some kids have a pretty easy life, right? We have to admit, even, I mean, most of our kids compared to 100 years ago, you know, where just everybody had to do a lot of physical hard things just to survive as a family. Yeah. Most of our kids have a fairly easy life. So I encourage parents to make sure that they find ways to give their kids challenges, to create things that will grow those character muscles. So clearly this book is, you know, across the board can relate to anybody. I know a lot of it is related to motherhood and hard things, but do you have a word for parents raising kids, giving them some of that same message?
Absolutely. So I think we need to be really cognizant of the fact that, just like you just said, we are not doing our kids a favor when we make sure that they never encounter hard things. And you mentioned, like, we don't go looking for challenges, and I know exactly what you mean. But I would say, absolutely go looking for challenges, but don't necessarily go looking for, like, some form of masochism. Like, and I talk about that in the book because people are like, wait a minute, not all hard things are good. Agree. Just because hard is not the same thing as bad doesn't mean that every challenging, difficult bit of suffering we encounter is actually a good thing. You know, sometimes we're bringing it on ourselves. Sometimes it's the fallen world we live in. Sometimes it's evil people. Sometimes it's disease, and we're not going to declare that good because the Lord clearly did not create that at the beginning of the world and declare it good. You know, this is a fallen world. And so I think we are absolutely on the same page when we are saying, give your kids opportunities to be uncomfortable. Let them be bored. You don't have to be their cruise ship director. I mean, that is just a very basic thing. You don't have to fill your children's lives with entertainment. It's not easy to be bored. You feel uncomfortable and annoyed, but it's certainly not bad to have to become more resourceful, to have to wash your own clothes and learn that process. So I just really feel like there's a lot of opportunities within the home. I mean, in homeschooling, certainly, but any other family's dynamic as well, to give your kids responsibilities that help them to learn new abilities, new skills. So I have one that's learning to bake, and she's been in the process for a long time. And there have been a lot of messes and a lot of failed recipes. But we are to the point where sometimes I come in from doing a podcast with someone, just like I'm doing with you, and there are 3 loaves of baked bread on my counter, and they are delicious, and she's only 11 years old. And I know that that's not an example of something that is truly, like, strenuous. But learning new things is, like I said, it's uncomfortable. So I think we need to be careful not to rob our kids of that opportunity. 2, maybe this should have been 1, we need to be careful of how we're responding to hard things in front of them. We are whining and complaining constantly, and then we're saying, hey, have a good attitude. Go do that hard thing. Our kids are going to see the hypocrisy, and they're not going to respond well to that. So leading by example is huge. And the 3rd thing I would say is, in the process of pouring into our kids biblically, which we are called to do in Deuteronomy 6:6-8, that we're to teach our kids God's way, that we are to impress them upon our children as we walk, as we sit, as we lie, as we stand, which is basically everything that we do, right? That covers all of it. That since we are called to be our children's primary spiritual educators, one of the great things that we have in the Bible is stories of adversity constantly. whether it's David or Elijah or Elisha or Paul or Jesus or James, or, and we're talking about people who ended up beheaded, crucified upside down, hiding in a rock because they were going to be burned at the, you know, on an altar to Baal, like hiding from this crazy king that's trying to kill them. Like, you have so many opportunities to, I think it's Elisa Childers, and I may misquote her horribly, but she was basically talking about how growing up with the Bible, she always respected God's word, but she never thought of it as like applicable to real life. It was something, she said something similar to that. She said it was not until she started looking at these quote unquote stories as histories of people with very real needs, wants, hungers, pains, like emotions, you know, feelings, just like we have, that she realized this is not just an allegory. This is an example to follow. This is an example of the Lord actually showing up in a specific real person's life and bringing victory and bringing change. So being faithful to teach those examples to our children, I think they're there to help us out.
Absolutely. And I know you, like we, love missionary stories.
Yes.
And reading stories to our kids, even, you know, beyond the Bible. Bible has plenty to last a long time, but there's also some great inspirational stories that can set that example. I always say, I want my kid, I have this like little security that if my kids were to face the unthinkable, you know, put in whatever your unthinkable is, I want them to be able to recall people of the past who have faced even harder.
So
and made
good.
It through.
So good. Yeah. Christian Heroes Then and Now is a series that I always recommend. It's super engagingly written. The stories are just mind-blowingly compelling. I mean, I know that they probably left out some of the parts where these people were real humans, but you come away so inspired and so just in awe of the way the Lord works in regular people's lives.
Oh, Abby, I could talk to you all day long, but I need to let you go. So thank you for your time. There's so much more in the book. Your husband, like Raising Amazing, My Husband Has a Word to the Dads at the End. People have loved that. I love, love that it. Your husband contributes at the end of each chapter. So we need those men to be reading, even if it's a little bit. We need men to have good role models. So I'm grateful for both of you. Obviously, you can find this book anywhere books are sold. Mm-hmm. Where can people just jump on and follow you, get in your weekly Q&As, all that?
Oh, yeah. So I'm microblogging on Instagram and Facebook. Instagram is at m.is.4.mama. People couldn't read the name.
You'll find
the
it box. Easily, though.
Yeah, it's easy to find. Should pop up. You can find me in over 600 blog posts archived on msformama.net. You can get on my weekly news plan or newsletter, which is a meal plan newsletter. I literally give you 5 dinners and 5 breakfasts every single week.
I get that every week.
Free. And I don't care if you use any or all of them, but I get messages from people that are like, this is such like a practical help. I don't even have to think about it anymore. It's amazing. So I'm happy to give that resource. And like you mentioned, I do a weekly Q&A on Wednesdays called What Do You Want to Know Wednesday, where I can't answer all the questions, but because I get hundreds every week, but I do that on my, I do that on my social media as well. And I have a podcast called M's for Mama, just to keep it
there
easy.
There we go. Yeah. So you're bored all the time, obviously.
Bored all the time.
Hey, I wasn't planning to ask this, but you know what, those weekly meal plans, is there a cookbook in your future?
No, there is not. There really isn't. I love to cook.
Never say never.
It's true. It's true. I love to
People
cook.
Would love it.
And I'm decent at it, meaning I make food that tastes good and I kind of have a feel for it after many years of doing it. But I don't have a passion for breaking down the process. I get really, even when people are like, do a reel of this, do it. And I'm like, oh, it's too much time. Like, I can't.
I get you. My mom taught me to just, you know, kind of dump, feel it out, throw in this and that. And so when I post recipes, I'm always like, oh no, I've got to actually give the amount.
I know. People are like, what are you doing? I'm like, I made it up. Okay.
Right. So true. Well, Abby, thank you so much for your time. Love talking to you and just so encouraged by you and grateful for the work that you do.
Thank you. Right back at you, Monica. Thank you.
God bless and aloha. All right, friends, I hope you were encouraged by that conversation. And again, be sure to go to show notes to get all the links find the link to the launch team signups and everything else. And you can find show notes at monicaswanson.com/Abby-Halberstadt. Again, or you can just look for the podcast link over on my website at monicaswanson.com. Okay, friends, thanks for being here. Love hanging out with you every week. Please continue to spread the word about this podcast to your friends and family, and follow along in all of the places. I'm on Instagram at monicaswanson_. All right. Say hi wherever you're at. I love to chat with you throughout the week. So God bless you guys. Have a wonderful rest of your week. And until next time, aloha.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only, not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.